welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Valiant Sunday episode, and it's about time I started on the Valiant chronology. So this is going to be a chronology, or a reading order, if you will, for the VEI, the Valiant Entertainment portion of the Valiant universe. So I may at some point go back and do VH1 or the first iteration of Valiant from the 90s, but being that this is the universe that exists now, I thought I would start here. And the book I'm going to start with is the book that kicked it off back in 2012, Exo Manowar number 1. And let me give you the creative team before I get into the synopsis of the story. It's written by Robert Venditti. The pencils are by Kerry Nord. The inks are by Stefano Guadino. Colors by Moose Bauman, and letters are by Dave Lamphere. So this was cover dated May 2012, and as I said, it was the first book that the new version of Valiant put out, our first monthly book. I think they had put out some trades or hardcovers, some collections prior to this that actually, I think some of those had some original content. But this was really the book that relaunched the shared superhero universe of Valiant. So as we open the book, we see on the inside cover, there's some historical facts. There's a timeline. Welcome to Exo Manowar number 1. Welcome to 4002 AD. Or I'm sorry, 402 AD. And as I said, there's a timeline. And then there's a couple of kind of text boxes that give some stats on the Visigoths and the Romans. And it really helps to illustrate the differences between the two cultures. You can see that the Visigoths are much less technologically advanced. They don't live as long. They're much more nomadic, whereas the Romans, the Roman Empire, it even says here, the sole superpower of the ancient world. So as we get into the story itself, we see two Visigoths that are running up a hill to join their brethren. And as they crest the hill, on the following page, we get an incredible double-page splash of this pretty decent-sized ragtag group of Visigoths. But across the battlefield, there is row upon row of Roman legionnaires, archers, onagers, and the archers have already fired a volley. And the Visigoths are trying to form their lines while at the same time using their shields to protect themselves from the onslaught of the Roman archers. And as they do that, the Romans also release what I'm going to assume is burning pitch from their onagers. And for those not aware, so pitch is kind of like tar, but it was flammable. So you'd light it on fire and you'd launch it, and it would hit wherever it landed, and it would like splatter, and it was sticky and you couldn't get it off, and it burned very hot. So it was not something you wanted to be on the receiving end of. So as this onager fire, this pitch, starts to impact the Visigoth forces, the king, Alarak, orders a retreat. He says, "Curse General Stilicho. The coward fires his barbs from afar, afraid to meet us on open field. We must save our strength and for a battle of our own design." Signal the retreat. And he rides off the field. And as he retreats, we see him speak to one of his soldiers. He says, "Fall back with your men, Arik. We will cross swords with Stilicho another day." But Arik, he doesn't look like he's in the mood to retreat, let's put it that way. And another of his men says, "Arik, let's do as your uncle says. The battle is lost." And Arik says, "No, victories can still be ours, Gafti. We must charge. Put the enemy on the defensive." Gafti, the soldier, the right-hand man of Arik, says, talk some sense into your son, Rolf. And Rolf says, I've seen that look in his eyes many times. There'll be no talking to him. And Ark says, the time for talk has passed. It's time to fight. And he charges toward the Romans, gathering the rest of the Visigoths on the way with a stirring speech about the fact that they must fight for their fathers and mothers and their sons and daughters, and finally for a land to call home. So they indeed attack the Romans. They're outnumbered, but they actually seem to be holding their own pretty well until a messenger arrives and says that the Romans have breached the Visigoths' camp. And so they ride, the Visigoths ride off to try to protect and save their women and children. And meanwhile, the Visigoths that are left are being overrun. And Rolf, Ark's father, says, damn it, boy, we're overrun. I'm assuming he's going to tell him he needs to retreat. But as he's turning to talk to Ark, he's run through with a spear. And Ark is obviously distraught. Puts his father on horseback and rides off, and we see all the rest of the Visigoths retreating as well as the Romans claim victory. So later at the Visigoth camp somewhere in northern Italy, following the retreat, Ark is telling his father that the Romans have called up their pursuit and they've made camp for the night. Rolf is injured, still bleeding, asking for Inga, Ark's mother. And Ark informs him that the Romans took many prisoners before they could retreat. Mother was among them. And his uncle, Alarak, is bargaining for their return. But they're already on the way back to Rome. And Rolf is distraught. He says, leave me to die, boy. Go be with your wife while you still can. Ark says, Deidre was taken too. But we're going to ride after them and cut them down and rescue our people. And he tries to return his father's sword. And Rolf refuses it. He said, you should have left it there. It's not worth the strength it took to carry it. And the army is made of fools. Swords did not stop the Huns from driving them out. And it has not gained them a land of their own. The Romans have Balliste and Onager, cities with high walls. We have blades and open fields. It's not enough. And he says it was never enough, and he dies. And Ark is very sad. But he decides he's going to take his vengeance. He's going to take his sadness out on the Romans. And even then, a rider says, Romans be on the western barricade, every warrior to arms. And so Ark leads his men. If Stilicho's dogs have come to pick over our bones, we will make them choke on them. And as they peer over the rise, they see a massive transport ship, and they're remarking on the size of it and how many Romans it could possibly hold, and if their families might be there as well. And they're worried. They think maybe they should exercise caution. And Ark never wants to exercise caution or think before he leaps into battle. Indeed, leaps into battle. Says, give no quarter. But it turns out these aren't Romans. They seem to be firing some kind of energy weapons. And they bleed green blood. And the Visigoths actually make relatively quick work of them, because there are a relatively few amount. When they remove their helmets, they don't look human. And Ark remarks that Stilicho has no criteria when hiring his conscripts. He'll take any manner of man or beast to do his fighting. And as they're examining one of the dead bodies, a door opens in the transport, and a giant robotic battle armor approaches. Meanwhile, back in the camp, we see some robed and hooded figures dressed much like the non-Romans that we just saw. They are, in fact, aliens. And we see they're invading the camp. They're sneaking around. They find a small baby, and they pluck a hair, put it in some kind of a serum on a, like, looks like a tranquilizer gun, and then they inject it into what looks like an infant alien. And the infant alien shape changes, and the alien swaps it with the human baby. And as the mother returns, she sees, she can't tell the difference. She thinks it's still her son. Meanwhile, back at the battlefield, Arik is telling his men to close the distance because the aliens have ranged weapons. And if they can get in close, they can still win the day. He himself charges the battle armor, swings his sword at it, and it's actually his father's sword, and it shatters. And then Arik is knocked unconscious. So as all the Visigoths are either dead or unconscious, as Arik is, the aliens that had infiltrated the camp return, and they tell Commander Trill, who's actually in the armor, that the planting was successful. Trill responds, "Excellent, the others have already returned. Load the survivors for transport. We will depart at once." And they get into their transport, which is actually a ship, and they fly into space. And we see many, many, many other ships leave Earth as well. So it seems like this quote-unquote planting was very much widespread. Then the scene shifts to deep space, approaching a Vine colony ship. Apparently these aliens are called the Vine. And we see the transports land, and there are many captured prisoners, and they're marched off in, not handcuffs, but their hands are bound. And Gapdi wonders, what is this place? Well, Arik seems to trip, and he actually has a piece of his sword, or his father's sword, the one that shattered against the battle armor of the Vine Commander Trill, and he uses that blade to cut himself free of his bonds. And apparently they're actually made out of vines. It looks like they're living with thorns on them. And Arik manages to choke the alien escort that had been taking him and Gafdi somewhere. We're not sure where. So now that they're free, they sneak around. They come across what looks like almost like a chapel or a church, and we see an orb floating over a tree stump, and we see many more of the aliens in blue robes, and they're bowing down. It's almost like they're worshiping this orb. And a Commander Pith enters, and they tell him for his prowess in battle, he's been chosen for the highest honor. May Shanhara deem you worthy. So apparently this orb is called Shanhara, and as he approaches it, it kind of expands and comes apart and forms body armor on him. And Gapdi, from his viewing spot above, says to Arik, "The metal, it moves on its own. Have you ever heard of such a thing?" Arik replies, "Not even in myths." And Gapdi wonders if that's their king, the one that's putting on the armor. And right then, Gapdi is knocked unconscious from behind. Arik is surrounded by guards, and you can tell he wants to fight, but one of the guards aims his weapon at Gafdi's head, and Arik stops resisting and says, "The day will come." Meanwhile, the alien that put on the armor says, "I feel it. Shanhara speaks to me. The power, it's magnificent." But then he starts choking, starts screaming, and then falls over, apparently dead. And the armor leaves his body and returns to its spherical shape above the stump. And the aliens that are left remark that they're scorned again. "Even our strongest perish. The sacred armor of Shanhara has deemed Commander Pith unworthy. It will only bestow its gifts on the worthy one." So they have to keep worshiping it and trying to find one of their warriors who can wield the armor. And he remarks, much like Arik did himself just a few pages earlier, that the day will come. So we see that Arik is in a cell with some other humans that were captured. Gafdi comes too. He says, "What is happening, Arik? What did we see in that room?" And Ark responds that he doesn't know, but he's seen less ceremony at the launching of a ship of war, and the creatures that have them captured possess powerful weapons. You know, their swords splintered like branches against them. If they want to defeat the enemies that have them captured, they'll need weapons. So they need to find their way back to that room. They've got to take the creature's weapons and then escape, and then they'll be able to crush the Roman Empire brick by brick, because the Romans will finally know what it's like to feel outmatched, starting with the bastards who put my wife in chains, Arik says, to be continued. So first thing I want to mention is the art. At this time, Kerry Nord was probably the book he was most known for doing was Conan. So it makes sense that they would want him on this book with Roman soldiers, you know, starts out set in ancient time, 402 AD, you know, Visigoths and armor and, you know, sword fighting and all that. So an incredible job. And as much as I enjoy his rendering, for me, where Kerry Nord's art really shines is the storytelling. I mean, yeah, he draws battle scenes really well, and he does action really well. He varies his angles around in the panels quite a bit, moving the camera around. But for all that, his storytelling is something special, I think. His just his sense of, you know, the sequential form of comics and showing us what's happening, giving us some quiet scenes at times, and then the double page spread with the two armies on the field against each other. I mean, that's worth the price of admission all on its own. So really, really incredible work. And I should also say that Nord's art is not the most finished looking style in his rendering and shapes and such, but Stefano Guadagno gives it a very much polished look. I've seen some other people ink Kerry Nord later, and I don't enjoy it as much as I do with Stefano's inks over the top of it. And Moose Bauman's colors, again, a great job. There's nothing really bright, with the exception of maybe fire or the energy weapons that the Vine aliens are wielding. Everything else is sort of muted. A lot of muted bluish tones, brown shades. And again, it works to show that this is ancient times. So you know, as far as visually, I think it's a really, really well done story. The story itself, obviously, we've learned quite a bit about Arik in a relatively short time. And without him really expounding much, I mean, he's given a couple of mini speeches. So, you know, when I say he hasn't expounded, there's no dialogue boxes, there's no inner dialogue. But just through the way that Arik, you know, defied his king and went to battle, and the speech he decided to use to try and, you know, get as many of his men to agree to go into battle against the king's wishes, you know, clearly he has the gift of leadership. But he's very much a flawed person, and that comes across right away in the first issue as well. A bit of a hothead. Very much a leap before you look kind of character. So that kind of plays out through the first arc. And it's probably the one trait of Arik that we get the most. It's mentioned several times by several different characters. Like when they actually think the Vine are the Romans, and they go and they're looking at them. And a couple of the men are like, yeah, maybe we should get some reinforcements. And Arik just jumps out and attacks. Or we could attack. Sure, that works too, right? I mean, there you can tell the warriors that are fighting alongside him are frustrated. So another thing that's really interesting about the story is for Valiant to decide to start with this property. I mean, it makes sense. One of the most well-known properties from the first go-around. And it was first back then too, so I'm sure that factored into it. But you can pick up issue 1 of Exo Manowar and you don't need to know anything. You don't need any background. You don't need to know anything about previous Exo Manowar. You don't, I mean, it is all here for you. You don't need to necessarily know about the Romans or remember what you learned about the Romans in high school or the Visigoths. Again, it's all here, and the pacing is well done. You know, from the first issue, we go from 402 AD to outer space, and we've met multiple aliens. So it's a great start and very compelling. You really, I mean, you got to know that Arik is going to get the armor somehow, right? I mean, he's the star of the series, and the series is still going to this day. So, you know, I'm pretty sure he's going to survive being captured, but how does he get the armor, and how does he escape? Like, all that stuff right away in the first issue, we're compelled to keep reading to find out why and how. So kudos to Venditti, Robert Venditti, for that. So a little bit of a setup issue. The next couple issues, it really starts to take off. But I'm glad they did it this way, because, again, it gives us a lot of insight into who Arik is, and, you know, how this version of Arik, what his values and priorities are. So yeah, I will be doing these chronologies once in a while moving forward, much like the Marvel Secret War chronology that we're doing. I'm using the Comic Book Herald website to determine what order I'm gonna read the books in. I mean, it's pretty easy to start out with. You know, you just do, you know, the books that relaunch Valiant. So you do Exo Manowar, you do Bloodshot, you do Harbinger, and you might as well do them in 4-issue chunks. And by that I mean, like, do 1 through 4 of Exo, do 1 through 4 of Bloodshot, do 1 through 4. Of Harbinger, because although they do tie in a little, I think doing it that way, it just makes more sense. That's the way you would read it in trade. So that way you're not jumping, we're not jumping from each issue to, you know, another story. It'll give us more time to get into it, I think, if we stick with one particular title rather than jumping around. So probably do, as I said, the first 4 of Exo, then the first 4 of Harbinger, and then the first 4 of Bloodshot. And I'll be sure and put the link to the reading order in the show notes for everybody. So once again, I want to thank everyone for joining us. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. While you're there, be sure and check out all our other coverage on movies, TV shows, comics, all that kind of good stuff. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.